You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Respectfully, Your Honor, the defense is very confused. They attempt to confuse the issue. They attempt to confuse Your Honor about what the impact would be. This has never been a change. The government is not changing their timeline. The Commonwealth is not changing any information. The Commonwealth is not offering anything that affects in any way the testimony of witnesses. It's notable in the argument there is no relationship to the facts or the actual report that was provided. The Commonwealth has always provided the data, which they have and they hadn't a chance to analyze. And the interpretation of the data has been different between the parties. We have been clear from the beginning at the time in which the infotainment system shows that there was a collision. We've been clear. And the data has been clear. That has never changed. That data in the Telestream system is based on a clock in the Lexus, which both sides know full well is different than a clock in an iPhone. You can see all the productions of Dr. Welch's PowerPoint presentation where it shows that time, 12:31:43, has never changed. Also, it has been clear that both sides appreciate that there is a variance between the clock in the Lexus, which leads to that system information, and a clock in an iPhone. In fact, the defense was so aware of it, they hired an expert, Mr. DeSorga, who gave his opinions about that variance. We have never suggested there was not a variance in this case. In fact, we have highlighted the variance. When their expert, Mr. DeSorga, provided a report, we believed that his analysis was wrong. And so we looked at the variance and the data that was available from the Telestream system and John O'Keefe's Waze data that was on his phone that was always available to all of the experts in both sides. And when Mr. Burgess looked at the variance at the time of a three-point turn about 7 minutes before the collision, he simply matched the Waze information on Mr. O'Keefe's phone to that of the information from the Telestream and saw that it was a 21 to 29 second variance. All that data was available to the defense because their expert made an improper conclusion is not our fault. This does not change the testimony of anybody. They point to Jen McCabe's text message where she said she thought she saw a motor vehicle out front that evening at 12:45. That is not consistent with the Commonwealth's timeline, but that doesn't change. That favors the defense. It does not change anything to do with ARCA. ARCA has not, as far as I've seen in any reports, ever talked about the variance, just Mr. DeSorga. And so because this is inconvenient for the defense, and because it further focuses the variance that we already discussed and provided, isn't a reason to exclude it. It's not late discovery. It's not a Rule 14 violation. It is further analysis of information that was already provided, opinions that were already provided, and it is in response to their expert's mistake about that variance. There's nothing new here. Nothing has changed.
Okay.
Go
right ahead, Mr. Lessing.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The only question I had for you yesterday, for you to respond to today, was the time. So I gave you more leeway.
And you're giving me more leeway, and I appreciate it.
Go right ahead.
So two items, Your Honor. As I alluded to yesterday, and it's been a point that Mr. Brennan just made, we believe strongly, Your Honor, that at a minimum there needs to be a voir dire of Mr. Burgess. And we believe strongly there needs to be a voir dire because we have a serious concern that the sequestration order has been violated. He has changed a very key aspect of this matter after the testimony of Mr. Whiffen, after Mr. Whiffen presenting a timeline. In his report, Mr. Burgess, his new purported report of May 8th, he references to align it with Mr. O'Keefe's cell phone. That is the essence of Mr. Whiffen's report, is anchoring in his timeline. He did a whole timeline on Mr. O'Keefe's report. And conveniently, the proposed alteration by Mr. Burgess in his report of this clock drift now makes it very, very close to fitting within Mr. Whiffen's timeline and the theory of the prosecution. At a minimum, we need a voir dire to ask Mr. Burgess, why did he do what he did? Another reason for the voir dire. Mr. Brennan yesterday said, we were surprised to get the report. That further makes great concern as to why Mr. Burgess did what he did. Lastly, Your Honor, with regard to Mr. Brennan's point, and he made it yesterday and I corrected it, he said it again today, that supposedly our witness, Mr. DeSogra, made an error and that we're trying to correct an error of Mr. DeSogra. That is incorrect, Your Honor. Again, Mr. DeSogra was responding to Mr. Burgess's report. Mr. DeSogra's report is entirely saying, okay, Mr. Burgess says this, and therefore the defense says this. Now Mr. Burgess is changing what he is saying. So it is completely incorrect to say that Mr. DeSogra is trying to correct an error. That would require, again, Mr. DeSogra to change what he has done. Final point is this. There was also an issue, Your Honor, and this is extremely important with regard to burden shifting. There's not only the question of should this be allowed at all, there's not only the question of how much time the defense will need, but there's a third and important issue, and that's burden shifting. What Mr. Brennan proposed yesterday was a very irregular process where essentially the Commonwealth gets three bites at the apple for a problem that they caused. The problem we're talking about is Mr. Burgess changing a significant part of a timeline. Yes, there was a variance that he had, but he picked a range of the variance. He's now changing the variance. So what the Commonwealth is proposing is that our witnesses go forward, the aperture gets to wait, they come on, and then they get to come, the aperture gets to come on yet again.
I did not understand the Commonwealth asking me that. Are you asking me to do that, Mr. Brennan?
I appreciate the clarification.
I'm not sure what he's saying, so.
It sounds like DeBroja or whatever.
His name is DeSogra, yes.
DeSogra, you're suggesting that the Commonwealth suggested yesterday that he testifies first and then the aperture witnesses?
What I understood was going to happen is Mr. Brennan said yesterday that Dr. Welcher cannot come in until after.
No, I didn't understand that. I understood Dr. Welcher, Shannon Burgess, and then Dr. Welcher for everything that you folks received prior, January 31st or whatever the date was. And then potentially for all the new ARCA information that came in May 7th, that portion, Dr. Welcher returning on rebuttal for. Not that they were holding back Dr. Welcher completely. Is that correct, Mr. Brennan?
That's the conversation I had. That conversation I wasn't part of.
Yeah, I think you misunderstood that, Mr. Lessie.
So I did, just so I'm clear, what is it that
Mr. Brennan, all right, this is separate, and I'd really like to give everybody a break here. What is it the Commonwealth is asking to do regarding that?
Regarding Mr. Burgess or Mr. Welcher?
Dr. Welcher.
Dr. Welcher should come in and testify to his PowerPoint, all of his opinions, which addressed all of the prior representations and opinions of ARCA, although we still don't have any raw information, but we're ready to move forward. Regarding any new opinions, which there is over a dozen new opinions that includes testing, video, experiments, Dr. Welcher should have enough time to review, conduct his own testing, turn it over, and then in rebuttal, address limited to the new issues raised by ARCA.
That's how I understood it, Mr. Lessie.
And that's how I did also, but the question is now with the Burgess changing of the clock drift, how many times is the Commonwealth proposing that Dr. Welcher gets to come in and talk about that? Is he just going to come in and talk about it?
So you talk with Mr. Brennan about that. All right, so I'm all set for this.
There are no changes. There is no changes in the timeline. He keeps trying to portray this as something has changed. Nothing has changed. It's the exact same. He's always said there's a variance. He's been looking into the variance for a long time, and now he has found a method to show the exact variance. It's not changing. There's nothing in the reports that changes as far as the timeline. That's just an attempt to cause fear. There's nothing that has changed. We can look at the reports. It's all the same, always has been, other than now he's identified the mistake of their expert, and that led him to be able to identify the variance, which is helpful and new. And the suggestion that there's been some violation of an order, no good faith basis whatsoever.
Does the Commonwealth oppose a voir dire just on that one issue?
Yes, because it's suggesting that there's a good faith basis for it. Nothing has changed. Ian Whiffen's report was available to the defense and our experts months and months and months ago. The issue of variance has been an ongoing issue for months. There's nothing that triggers a change in the testimony to adopt or adapt to it. Our timeline has been the same since when we turned it over at the beginning. They cannot point to one thing that has changed between Dr. Welcher, Ian Whiffen, Jessica Hyde, or Shannon Burgess. They are just saying things without a good faith basis. In the report, show us where something has changed.
Your Honor, to inform you, Your Honor, we would like to print the page in the clock adjustment because what Mr. Brennan says is
yes,
incorrect.
Yes, and I'm happy to any information.
Thank you.
All right.
20 minutes.
Nine.
Thank you.
All rise for the court, please. Session, please be seated.
Thank you.
Gotta go. Thanks, Chrissy. All right, so Mix Valera, I'm going to ask you that you speak right into your microphone when you answer, if you could, please.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Lally, go right ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now, Mix Valera. We talked about sort of the physical match or mechanical fit analysis that you did with regard to each of the items individually, correct?
Yes.
And can you explain for the jury the process that you undertook in your physical match analysis between different item numbers?
So between different items, amongst the questioned ones, I only compared the pieces that were large enough to have a label on them. Some pieces were quite small. I utilized several benches and divided them up into sections for each item and individually pulled out all of those pieces. And then I had another bench where I did the actual comparison. I started with all the pieces of the same color and looked to see if any of those had potential edges that could match.
Now, with respect to items 715 and 716, did you do a physical match analysis between those two separate items?
May I look at my notes?
Yes.
Yes.
And what, if any, conclusions did you come to in relation to your physical match analysis between item 715 and item 760?
Two pieces from item 7-15, F and H, fit mechanically with two pieces from item 7-16, F and G.
And what, if any, conclusion were you able to draw with reference to the physical match between pieces from item 715 and pieces from item 716?
Those four pieces were at one time together as part of a larger unit.
Now, Mix Valera, what physical match analysis did you do with reference to items 7-6 and 7-11.
So one piece from item 7-6, piece B, fit mechanically with one piece from item 7-11, piece D. So those two pieces were at one time together as a larger unit.
And Ms. Valier, with reference to items 7-8, 7-9, and 7-16, what, if any, conclusions were you able to draw from any physical match analysis you did between pieces from those three items?
So two pieces from item 7-8, pieces C and D, one piece from item 7-9, piece A, and one piece from 7-16, piece E, were found to have a mechanical fit. So those pieces were at one time together as a larger unit.
Lastly, for this section, at some point did you do a physical match analysis for the glass pieces in items 7-12 and 7-14?
Yes.
And what conclusions were you able to draw from your physical match analysis between 7-12 and 7-14?
There was no physical match between the glass pieces from, or apparent glass pieces from 7-12 and the glass piece from item 7-14.
Now, Ms. Valier, are you aware that there was an additional analysis that was done with respect to glass pieces and other glass pieces that you didn't examine in your analysis at your lab?
I know that there was other trace work done. I'm not sure exactly what the work was.
Okay. And do you know who performed that additional trace work?
Christina Hanley.
And who is she to you as far as in reference to your work at the lab?
She's my supervisor.
Now, with regard to each of these items individually, they came as labeled in individual bags, as we demonstrated on the screen, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And with respect to those bags, did you note any particular date associated on the front of those bags?
That's documented in my photos.
And all I'm asking here is that with respect to each of those bags of items, whether they be 3-1, 7-4, 7-5 or 6 or 8, many of those bags had different dates on them, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And when you received those items in that bag, you essentially removed the items from those individual bags, placed them on the table, and examined them, correct?
Yes.
And that examination included a microscopic examination?
Yes.
Now, with respect to any of those items, there were some items that pieces within the same bag that had the same date on that bag did not fit together mechanically, correct?
Yes.
However, there were items from one bag collected on one date that did fit mechanically with items from another bag collected on another date. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, if I could turn your attention to item 3-1. Again, for the jury, what is the physical description associated with item 3-1?
Item, passenger side taillight, Massachusetts 3GC684.
Now, did you perform a physical match analysis with pieces from item 3-1, 7-5, 7-6, 7-8, 7-10, 7-11, 7-12, 7-13, 7-14, 7-15, and 7-16?
I compared them, yes.
And what, if any, conclusions did you come to from your analysis, your physical match analysis between item 3-1 and all of the items beginning with the number 7?
There was a physical match with, do you want me to list?
If you could, please.
Okay. So two pieces from item 7-5, four pieces from item 7-8, one piece from item 7-10, four pieces from item 7-11, two pieces from item 7-12, two pieces from item 7-13, four pieces from item 7-15, and four pieces from item 7-16, were found to fit mechanically with item 3-1.
And what, if any, conclusions were you then able to draw from your physical match analysis between item 3-1 and each of those respective items beginning with the number 7?
Those pieces were once together as part of a larger unit.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Mayor, I'm showing you 3 additional photographs. Do you recognize what's depicted in those?
I do.
And what do you recognize those?
This is a comparison between item 3-1 and those pieces from all of the other pieces.
Your Honor, Tom Walton, seek to introduce and admit as the next exhibit A, B, and C.
Is there any objections to any?
No objection, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Exhibit 182A,
and C. And may I publish, Your Honor?
Yes.
Ms. Gilman, if I could have photograph 2096. And Ms. Gilman, yes, if you could even zoom in just a little bit more on the item itself. Ms. Valier, what are we looking at in this photograph?
So those pieces that I labeled from item 7-, all of those, they all fit together mechanically into this piece.
And as far as earlier, you were testifying as far as the label maker and the different various pieces that you would label throughout the process of your physical match analysis. Do you see these in this photograph as well?
I do.
And where are they located with reference to the reconstructed piece above?
They're those little white rectangles on the piece.
So what's depicted here is the mechanical fit between items 7-5, 7-6, 7-8, 7-10, 7-11, 7-12, 7-13, 7-14, 7-15, and 7-16, correct?
Not items 7-8 and 7-14, but the other ones, yes.
And why not those two?
They didn't fit mechanically with the other pieces.
Ms. Gilman, if I could have 2150. And again, if you could just zoom in a little. And Mix Valier, what are we looking at in this photograph?
So on the right side was that piece that was just shown. And on the left side is item 3-1.
And lastly, Ms. Gilman, if we could have 2151. Again, if you could zoom in on that item just a little. And Mix Valier, what are we looking at in this photograph?
So that's that right piece on top of the taillight from the previous photo.
And is this the mechanical fit that you were testifying about earlier with reference to item 3-1, the taillight housing, and all of the various pieces that were found at 34 Fairview, starting with the number 7?
Yes.
Thank you. Ms. Gilman, you can take that down. Ms. Valier, lastly, in reference, did you also receive some debris from John O'Keefe's clothing?
Yes.
And Mr. Officer, we can have the lights back on. Thank you very much. And what did you find contained within that debris from John O'Keefe's clothing?
So it was 5 different items. So it was debris collected from, labeled as coming from the clothing. There was mostly debris, some apparent fibers.
Were there any pieces of apparent plastic contained within the debris?
Yes.
Was there dirt contained within the debris?
Yes.
And that debris was labeled as an item 17-18.18, is that correct?
I believe so.
And what is it that you did with the debris from the gray long sleeve shirt and the orange t-shirt?
So those were all packaged in like glassine folds. And I looked through it and documented it.
When you say you documented it, did you look at it under a microscope?
Yes.
So you did an examination under a microscope, is that correct?
Yes.
And did you measure some of those items contained within the debris?
Yes.
Specifically, did you measure items of apparent clear plastic contained within the debris?
Yes.
And what did you measure those items to be?
The piece of clear apparent plastic was approximately 1/8 inch by 1/16 inch.
And once you had conducted your preliminary analysis of those items, where did those items go?
I did no further examination on this myself. Christina Hanley might have examined some of these further.
Thank you. I have nothing further.
Gianetti? Thank you very
much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to first talk fairly briefly about your reconstruction of the taillight to which you've testified. At the outset, by the way, that was item 7-3.1, am I correct?
Sorry, for which one?
That's the taillight, this 7-3.1, am I correct?
3-1, I believe.
7-3-1?
The taillight is item 3-1.
Oh, 3-1, I'm so sorry, okay. With regard to that particular item, your lab has different departments, correct? Criminalists who do different things, correct?
Yes.
You are aware that there are scientists within your lab who do DNA analysis, for instance, correct?
Yes.
And with regard to the order of processing items, is the DNA analysis done before or after you get the item?
It's usually before.
Okay. In this case, it was before. Am I correct?
I believe so.
Were you made aware that there were three contributors of DNA to that taillight, 3-1?
How long were you made aware of that?
No.
Once you reconstructed the taillight, you'll agree with me that it was missing a piece, correct? Or pieces?
There was an empty spot on the overall reconstruction, yes.
Were you ever provided with any pieces of taillight that would have filled in that missing spot?
No.
Were you ever provided or told about any pieces recovered from One Meadows Ave in Canton?
No.
Were you ever told about a collision at One Meadows Ave in Canton?
Sustained.
In any case, you'll agree with me, there was no glass in that taillight at all, correct?
Within the taillight, I classified them as apparent plastic pieces.
There's no glass as part of the taillight, correct?
I mean, it depends on what you call, like, the bulbs usually have glass, as far as I'm aware.
Those are very, very thin glass, though, correct? Those bulbs?
Yes.
All right. Now, your lab received clothing in connection with this case. You've testified to that, correct?
I received the debris labeled as coming from the clothing. I never saw the clothing at all.
Right, but you're aware that your lab received clothing before the debris got to you, correct?
Yes.
And your understanding was that that was John O'Keefe's clothing in which he was found on January 29th of 2022, correct?
It's labeled as coming from him. I'm not sure of the date that it was found.
Okay. You understand the procedure that goes on at your lab when it receives evidence?
Yes.
And you know that once clothing is brought to your lab, it's given evidence numbers, correct?
Yes.
And then one of your colleagues at the lab handled the clothing and or examined it, correct, before it came to you?
Yes.
And your understanding is that one of your colleagues retrieved debris from those items of clothing and then packaged it in a fold before it got to you, correct?
Yes.
You then open up the fold and you look at the debris, correct?
Yes.
You never saw that debris inside the clothing, correct?
Correct.
And the pieces of clothing that come in are given evidence numbers when your lab receives them, correct?
Yes.
For instance, the orange t-shirt was given or was named item number 7-17?
Yes.
And the gray long sleeve shirt was item 7-18, correct?
Yes.
And your lab is accredited, correct?
Yes.
There is a complete chain of custody from the moment the clothing was brought to the lab to when the debris was removed from the clothing, ultimately to when you're in court today handling the items, correct?
Yes, our in-lab chain of custody extends from when we receive it to when the submitting agent is returned to the submitting agency.
Okay, and you have complete confidence that the chain of custody at your lab is effective at making sure that the evidence does not get lost or mixed up or contaminated, right?
I mean, chain of custody is meant to track where a piece of evidence is. The evidence unit also does inventories and audits to make sure that things are where they're supposed to be.
And you have confidence in your lab's chain of custody policies and procedures, correct?
Yes.
But you'll agree that your lab cannot control who handled the clothing before it arrived at your lab, correct?
Yes.
There are times in which crime scene technicians from or criminalists from your lab actually participate in the search for evidence at a crime scene, do they not?
Some of the people at the lab are crime scene responders, yes.
There are times when they actually take custody of evidence. Again, I'm talking about people from your lab, professionals. They take custody right from the crime scene and transport that evidence to your lab, correct?
Yes.
In those circumstances, your lab would have a complete chain of custody from discovery to seizure to testing or whatever comparison you're doing until you release the items, correct?
Yes, but the electronic chain of custody doesn't start until that item is entered into our LIM system at the lab.
Right, but when it's entered in, it would be entered in as having been seized by somebody from your lab, correct? In the hypothetical that I'm giving you.
Yeah, there's an evidence submission form that says that this crime scene responder submitted it to the laboratory.
There are other cases, however, when the evidence is brought to your lab by the police, correct?
Yes.
Local departments have access to your lab?
For evidence drop-off, yes.
The state police have access to your lab for evidence drop-off?
Yes.
And in this case, it was not a criminalist or other professional from your lab who seized the clothing and brought it to your lab, correct?
I'm not sure.
Do you have a record of that in your report in terms of who it was that brought the material to your lab?
I could look at the evidence submission form to see who.
With the court's permission?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have that with you now, Ms. Please?
I do.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Nitti.
Having reviewed your reports, can you testify to the jury about who it was that brought this evidence into the lab?
You can tell us.
Okay. So submission 7, all the items that are 7-, was submitted by Trooper Michael Proctor.
Were you aware of the date of the incident that gave rise to this case?
Yes.
And what was that date?
January 29th, 2022.
Were you aware that the clothing that you received was seized from the Good Samaritan Hospital that very day?
No.
What date was the clothing brought to your lab?
March 14th, 2022.
So that means that your chain of custody at the lab began on March 14th of 2022, correct?
Yes.
And would you agree with me that was about 6 weeks after the date of the incident, January 29th of 2022?
Yes.
And of course, you can't speak to the chain of custody from January 29th to March 14th of 2022, correct?
Correct.
And you have no information and do not know why Michael Proctor waited 6 weeks to bring this clothing to your lab, do you?
Sustained.
Do you know where Michael Proctor stored this clothing during that 6 week period?
No.
Do you know how often he was alone with access to the clothing during that 6 week period?
Sustained.
Do you know if he had access to pieces of red or clear taillight during that 6 week period?
Objection, move the strike.
Sustained. Move on, Mr. Yen.
You were not present when the clothing was seized, correct?
Correct.
You did not have custody of this clothing from January 29th of 2022 to March 14th of 2022, correct?
Correct.
You do not know what was done with the clothing before it arrived at your lab, correct?
You've covered this, Mr. Yaney. Move on, please.
One last question. You cannot vouch for how the clothing or taillight pieces were handled before they got to your lab, correct?
I cannot.
Anything further, Mr. Lilly, or are you all set? I'm not curbing it.
No, no, no.
There is a separate evidence unit contained within the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory, correct?
Correct.
And fair to say you have absolutely nothing to do with that, correct?
I'm not a part of that unit.
And so your responsibility as far as chain of custody is concerned is from when you retrieve the item during your analysis and then when you return the item to the evidence unit, correct?
Correct.
And from that analysis that you performed, you found that there were 10 different items, starting with the number 7, that were a mechanical fit to 3-1, the taillight housing from the defendant's vehicle, correct?
If it's 10 items, I don't have, I could count them.
Okay. As far as all those items beginning with 7 that you went through or elucidated on your direct examination, each of those were a mechanical fit to each other and then to the taillight housing in 3-1.
The pieces that were previously stated, yes.
Nothing further.
All right, Ms. Felicia, you are all set. So, jurors, that is it for today. I am told when I spoke with counsel earlier that we are still on track. I have to tell you those same cautions. Please do not discuss this case with anyone. Don't do any independent research or investigation into this case. If you happen to see, hear, or read anything about this case, please disregard it and let us know. Be extra careful with your social media use. And also, I just want to remind you, next week, Thursday is a half day, and Friday is a day off. All right, so we'll see you on Monday.
Please rise for the jury.
Yeah.
You may be seated.
Okay. So before we recess, I appreciate that counsel provided me with the information. Mr. Lessie, I got the two reports that you had that were incorporated in what the Commonwealth had given me a few minutes before, but I appreciate that it was pointed out here. We've had full argument on this yesterday and today. My findings for the record are that the defendant has not persuaded me of undue surprise or unfair prejudice by this information, and I don't find that there's delayed disclosure. Of course, all of this is ample game for
cross-examination, certainly as to what Mr. Burgess knew, what he looked at, why he looked at it, when he looked at it, why he changed his report, and violation of the sequestration order is all for cross-examination, and I will give you a lot of leeway with that, Mr. Alessi, but I'm not having a voir dire on that. Mr. Alessi, I can tell you, obviously, you've got a great facility for cross-examining on the underlying information here. You've done fulsome cross-examinations. I have every confidence you can do it here again. But if after the direct, you demonstrate that you need further time, I'll certainly hear you on that. And more importantly, perhaps, if you feel that the testimony of Jen McCabe and the others that you've mentioned is critical and that you need to recall them, I'll hear you on that as well. So regarding Dr. Welcher, as my understanding, the request yesterday was for, and it's been a request, I think, a few days. We've addressed it at sidebar, and I found that it wasn't the right time. Let's see how much Dr. Welcher could go through. I understand Dr. Welcher will testify in the Commonwealth's case in chief next week or so, Mr. Brennan.
Hopefully next week, if not, all right. The day after the holiday.
And that will be for all of the material that was provided to the defendant initially, right, by the Commonwealth's discovery deadline?
Correct.
And what you're asking for is that after ARCA testifies, the new information, you're asking for rebuttal, right?
Yes, limited to the new information.
All right, so I would allow under these circumstances a limited rebuttal, and we can define the scope after we hear the testimony of Acker. So those are my rulings. Your objections are noted. I'll see everybody on Monday.
All rise for the court, please.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.